Jesus said, feed the hungry, clothe the naked. And a lot of people take that literally, and of course it is literal. But those of us who are, or those of us who hold the particular morality that you and I do, believe that there's a little more to it than that. We believe that not only must you feed the hungry and clothe the naked, but you must produce children who will be able to feed the hungry and clothe the naked. In fact, it is immoral for welfare mothers to produce children who become hungry and become naked. It is a violation of morality for us to refuse to produce children who will be able to feed the hungry and clothe the naked. This is a matter of morality with us. Every church today, except the Identity Christians, would say that the whole idea of genetics is immoral. Bill O'Reilly has announced over and over and over that children are not born with different abilities to learn. And in fact, liberals used to say that, but they've grown out of it. But Bill O'Reilly still says it. If you ask the average theologian, any theologian who is able to keep his job, or the Pope, whether there is such a thing as a genetic morality, he would say, of course not. Genetics itself is a violation of morality. If someone is highly intelligent, they should become priests and have no children. Now, this idea, I guess I will explain it later, doesn't come from the Old Testament. Certainly the Old Testament. I am no friend of the Old Testament, but I have to give it this much. The Old Testament never said that people should remain sterile the way that early Christianity did. But when I start talking about genetic morality, I am talking about something that is totally alien to every form of ethics that we have today. Just how many people on the Harvard faculty who hold positions in ethics are going to have a position about what children should be born? Well, that is definitely considered not a part of ethics. And of course, the reinforcement is that Adolf Hitler was worried about genetics. And so, if you worry about genetics, you are a Nazi who wants to kill 6 million Jews. And of course, the world is a hell of a lot simpler if you're morality does not include genetics, because predicting future generations is very, very difficult, and you're subject to a lot of mistakes. So when the question of smarter children or better children comes up, your professional moralist, whether he's a priest or a professor at Harvard in ethics, will say, first of all, Hitler said that. And you see where Hitler went. Then he will say, well, a lot of people bring up this question of, quote, better, unquote, children. But nobody can define what, quote, better, unquote, is. So that should remain in quotes and be ignored. On the other hand, and as a direct contradiction of this, not one of these moralists, be he a priest or a Harvard professor, ever has the slightest difficulty in defining what better is when it comes to social programs. A better child to better the society, he is more than willing to tax us to make our children go to public schools, because better means learning, literacy, use of good language, mathematics. We all know what better is. There's certainly no problem. That word better is never put in quotes when it comes to social programs. The priest says that the child who is well fed is better, and he expects you to give him money to make life better for that child. When you talk about looks, for example, I have talked about the morality of a black man marrying a white woman, a blonde, beautiful woman, because that ends the blonde beauty which he sought. That's immoral. He is going to end her line forever. Well, everybody would say, Bob, you are a Nazi who wants to kill 6 million Jews. Looks, they will say, don't matter. On the other hand, a lot of suburban women, I have noticed, of upper-class suburban women, will repeat this line that looks don't matter. I sort of look them over, and I notice that the total cost of the cosmetics that they're using, the beauty shops that they're going to, the clothes that they are wearing, comes to some tens of thousands of dollars, all dedicated to making them look good. And they're standing there looking me straight in the eye and saying, looks don't matter. This is what a lot of people who know me call a Whitakerism, something so obvious that nobody even notices it. The fact is that children who look better are better than children who are ugly. It's better for them. I would rather, going by the golden rule, look good than look bad. And of course, every time I get a haircut, I back up this proposition with a couple of bucks. Now, if a priest or a Harvard ethics professor were talking about children getting smallpox, one of the ways that they would justify the program to prevent smallpox would be that these children would be scarred for the rest of their lives. That makes perfectly good sense to me. But a good libertarian could walk up and say, what do you mean scarred? What do you mean looks? Looks don't matter. And the priest or the professor would turn off immediately. Which is exactly what I do when people say there is no such thing as better in genetics. Better in genetics means exactly the same thing that it does in social science programs. It means that the hungry are fed, that people are more literate, more capable of being literate. It means exactly the same thing. The justification for taking illegal drugs is that it makes one feel better. But I have yet to find anybody, any of these professional moralists, be they, again, priests or libertarians or Harvard professors of morality, social scientists, whoever, I have yet to find any of these people who say, okay, if it makes you feel better, that's fine. In fact, they have programs to keep people from using these drugs. On the other hand, I was looking at Tiger Woods and his Swedish, lovely, blonde fiancée. Now, the justification for this is that both Tiger Woods and his lovely blonde, who's going to get rich fast, are in a state of love with each other. They feel very, very good, and no one has a right to question this. Of course, the fact is that, well, to go back to another person, like another colored man like Tiger Woods, O.J. Simpson, everybody says, well, he has two mixed blood children and they are just beautiful. Well, the problem is that however wildly beautiful these children are, the simple fact of the matter is that O.J. Simpson would never have a mate who was mixed blood like those children. So his morality is subject to a great deal of question. We're not allowed to question it because, after all, Hitler questioned it, and anybody who questions it is a Nazi who wants to kill 6 million Jews. But let's grow up a little and let's talk about the real world. The fact is that the reason that Tiger Woods is marrying a blonde, blue-eyed woman is because she looks good to him. It's not an accident that he happened to fall in love with somebody who's blonde and blue-eyed. His father apparently did not like being black, so he married an Asiatic. And Tiger Woods is wildly wealthy, and I don't think that if we ever get honest with each other, that we're honestly going to say that, well, Tiger Woods happened to marry this blue-eyed blonde, classically beautiful blue-eyed blonde, because she had the personality that he liked. Come on, gang, get real. And that's the problem. Nobody gets real, least of all moralists. There is such a thing as looking better. Now, if you believe that blondes are beautiful, as O.J. Simpson and Tiger Woods obviously do, then what they have done is not moral. It is personally immoral. The whole concept of genetic morality is, of course, a contradiction in terms to the professional moralist of our day. The professional moralist of our day is not really that worried about Hitler, one way or the other, but morality has never been able to handle genetics. It has always been willing to take away freedom, take away money, in some cases to take away life, in order to make things, quote, better, unquote, for people. Even the libertarian is willing to go to some lengths to make people what he calls free. And he doesn't put that free in quotes the way that the professional moralist puts better when it comes to genetics. He believes in freedom without the quotes. The priest believes in feeding the hungry and clothing the naked, but he never puts that into quotes because those are real. Now, the problem with this lack of any morality relating to genetics is that in the 21st century, we are going to be faced more and more with precisely this problem. That is to say, we are going to be able to produce genetically the kind of children we choose. The priest will keep saying, well, that's no problem, just have children if you got to, and it'll take care of itself. Whereas he would never say that about feeding the hungry or clothing the naked. You can't just ignore the problem or let nature take care of it. And of course the same thing is true of the Harvard professor of ethics. He will argue that while we should have lots and lots of social programs to make things better, there's no excuse for anybody talking about, quote, better, unquote, in terms of genetics, because looks don't matter, because no children are more capable of learning than others. Actually, even the Harvard professor has now given up that old line that there's no such thing as genetics and learning or creativity or so forth. But he still sticks to it when it comes to morality. There's no such thing in our society as a genetic morality, and the problem is that in the next generation, that is precisely what we are going to have to deal with. Genetic morality is going to have to apply to our new power to determine genetics. And absolutely no professional moralist today has any hint of how we're going to deal with this intensely moral question. Now, I have a correspondent who holds a doctorate in theology. He is a Methodist minister, and I could write him about this and say, what is the Christian religion going to do in the next generation about genetic morality, about the choice of what genes children are going to have? Well, I really don't need to write the letter. I know what he's going to answer. His answer is going to be that genetics has nothing to do with morality. You know that, and I know that. If you went to your local minister and said, how are you going to deal with this business of choosing genes in the future? He would say, morality consists of not dealing with this question. The Christian answer always came from the idea that it was a question of having children or not having children. St. Paul, when he was questioned about this, said he would prefer his advice to unmarried women, back when the only way to have children, of course, was sexual intercourse. He said his preferred answer was that unmarried women never have any children. He said they should never have sex. They should remain sterile for the rest of their lives. He said, but he didn't put it in those terms, because he thought it in terms of personal morality. He said they should abstain just as I do. But if they must have sex, and therefore children, they should do it within wedlock. And that is the part that is always quoted. But the morality that St. Paul taught was that sterility is the only genetic morality. And of course we have had monasteries and convents ever since. And that is that ignoring genetic morality, or actually being in favor of people who can read, who can be taught to read, not having children, is pretty well the extent, the entire extent, of what we call morality today. Now, the bastard child of medieval Christianity is communism. And they ran into a similar problem. The communist idea, the Marxism, says that all value is objective labor time. That is to say, all laborers are created equal, and the value of something, for example, as Marx said, the value of water in the middle of the desert is the same as the value of water in the middle of a river. It only depends upon how much objective labor time is spent on getting that water. That is the basis of value in the Marxist system. This may sound a little crazy, but I suggest you look it up. By the same token, the Chinese had a hell of a time justifying birth control, because the more people are born, the more labor time is available, and labor time is value. Once again, this sounds a little crazy, but the world is a little crazy in this way. China now has a one-child per family program, as we know, but it took a hell of a lot of work for them to twist Marxist morality so that this birth control policy could be developed, because, to repeat, the basis of the Marxist religion is that all labor time is equal. Back in Stalin's day, the Medico-Genetical Institute of Moscow conducted an identical twin test. Now, identical twins are born with exactly the same genes. So, instead of keeping environment equal, you keep heredity equal. You take children who, at birth, were adopted into different families, and but these children are identical twins, they have the same genes, and then you test how well they do. They could be adopted into half of them would be adopted into a highly intellectual family, half of them adopted into a working class family, and they would end up, if the environmentalist theories are correct, then there would be all of the twins who are adopted into intellectual families would become intellectual, and all the children who were adopted into working class families would be working class, right? Well, the Medico-Genetical Institute of Moscow, right in the 1930s, did this huge test and discovered that the opposite was the case. They discovered, as every identical twin test has ever since, that children with the same genes tend to be similar, no matter what environment they are adopted into. Stalin had an answer to this little problem, because they had just violated the basic tenet of communism. Now, communism says that as long as the country is communist, the genes don't matter. They will make everybody equal, they will make everybody good, they will make everybody peaceful. Stalin wiped the Medico-Genetical Institute off the face of the earth. You won't hear this anywhere, because Hitler is the only person who ever did that kind of thing. Then he put Lysenko in charge of Russian genetics. Now, Lysenko said that everything was heredity, which is what that everything is environment, which is exactly what communism says. Among other things, Lysenko tried to make summer wheat, which grows in the summer, into winter wheat, which grows, well, in autumn, actually. He tried to do this by freezing it, by giving it a different environment. Well, I think you can kind of guess what the results of this were in Soviet agriculture. But it's a little hard for most people to realize how insane these ideas get. I remember some time ago, I believe it was about 20 years ago, there was a big thing about reuniting identical twins. And it was discovered that these identical twins would have the same taste in toothbrushes or in toothpaste. They would marry women with the same names. And of course, I know that they tend to commit the same crimes at the same ages, despite the fact that they are adopted into totally different families. One group of triplets, I remember, were in their 20s, and they were interesting. They were on the Donahue show because one had been adopted into a Catholic family, one had been adopted into a Protestant family, the other had been adopted into a Jewish family, and this was particularly interesting. But that Donahue show was the day this whole fad about identical twins ended, because Donahue was talking to the guy who had reunited these twins and was showing them off, and he said, so this shows that, Donahue said, so this really argues for heredity over environment, doesn't it? And the man who had presented those triplets looked like he had been slapped in the face. He knew exactly what Donahue meant. You are a supporter of Adolf Hitler. That day, the fad, which had actually reached a bunch of books and a bunch of interviews, ended. I have not seen any identical twins reunited since then. The fact is that all identical twin tests are suspect because they keep showing the same thing. As I say, children who are adopted into entirely different families at birth, because children are more adoptable at birth, they're going to commit the same crimes at the same time. And their environment really doesn't make that much difference. So, in order to say that there is no morality to genetics, you're going to have to forget identical twin tests, and that is what the media has done. And if you will sit there trying to think of the last time you saw a couple of identical twins reunited who were adopted into entirely different families at birth, you will see that what I say is precisely true. So if I write my friend who is a Methodist preacher with a doctor of theology degree, his argument will be there is no morality to genetics. I am not free to say that. There was a time when some people would argue that heredity really doesn't exist. I remember back in the 50s, because of Hitler, people kept arguing that on faculties or at universities, you would say genetics really didn't exist. But unfortunately today, we not only know that genes cause certain things, we know which genes cause certain things. So as time passes, this whole idea that there is no such thing as a genetic morality is going to run up against the fact that We don't need ethics professors who can argue that genetics don't matter. We're going to need people who can talk about genetics in moral terms. That is coming at us right down the track. And your local priest and your ethics professor and your professors are simply not going to be able to deal with it. So maybe some of us should. This is Bob Whitaker. This is the Untrained Eye. And one of the trainings that the trained eye gets is to ignore genetics. This is the Untrained Eye. And I hope to offend somebody else next week.